Good morning, everybody.
Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Sorry for the problems this morning. Some technical difficulties again. I think Shelley is on, but now I'm having trouble getting into into the station on the computer. I'm not sure what the deal is this morning. So give me 1 second and let me see if I can get us back in. I apologize. Okay, I'm in now, but Shelley's not here anymore, so let me... see if I can get her in again. Today we are going to talk about after surgeries, because of course in the past year I've had a lot to do with surgeries between my husband, my son Michael, my daughter-in-law Valerie, and of course the grandbaby. Lots of different hospital stays and lots of different things going on. It's been kind of an interesting ride, and it brought to me lots of information that I didn't know was important to know, such as preparing, for one thing, for surgery, and the side effects after you've been anesthetized. They are tremendous. And I think that I think that if we know ahead of time, then we're a lot better prepared. So I want to talk about after you wake up from being anesthetized. Some of the simple things that I learned about is, of course, ice packs. If you're having a surgery, one of the ways to cut back on pain relievers and painkillers, which often have side effects of their own, is ice. I'm a big proponent of ice anyway. I'm always telling everybody to try ice if they hurt their back, if they twist their ankle. I probably have 6 to 8 of the ice packs in my freezer, and I think they help a lot. So when I looked up some of the information, I was pleased to see that it's something that is suggested, especially if you've had a surgical site, like like a hysterectomy, some kind of abdominal surgery, even things like tonsillitis around your neck. The swelling around your neck can be intense, and I think that the big difference is that you need to be aware of what's going on and aware of how to take care of it. I think that I'm trying to talk to Shelley at the same time and let everybody know what's going on. I guess I'm not a very good multitasker this early in the morning. So some of the things that I learned about is, of course, skin rashes, lethargy, nausea, vomiting. All those kind of things are side effects, not so much of your surgery or what you've undergone, but of, you know, the anesthesia. if you have emergency surgery and you go in and you meet an anesthesiologist for the very first time and you fill out your little questionnaire, it gets kind of confusing. And I think that if you can have a surgery time that's set up, do all the proper protocol and things like that, your chances of recovery after a surgery that's been properly prepared for is certainly the best outcome. Now, even in some cases, if your anesthesiologist or even your surgeon doesn't know you very well, some of the tapes that they use, a lot of times now they don't even use stitches. They use like an adhesive, and they put the liquid on your skin and then attach the tape to it. And often that is to close a wound instead of using stitches. So a lot of people have allergies to the adhesive that they paint on their skin and wake up with rashes or raw spots on their skin, a lot of different side effects. And of course today, and we've talked about this at length on the show, today it's all about MRSA because it is rampant right now in hospitals. And then there's also MERS, which is different. MERS comes from camels, and it's a respiratory infection. And you can also catch that in the hospital. If you are going to have a hospital stay, and if you are going to have a procedure that actually requires an incision or something like that, my best advice to you at this point in time is to build yourself up a little bit before your surgery. If you're lucky enough to know that you've got to have the surgery and you're lucky enough to know when it's going to be and all those good things, prepare. And, of course, some of that comes with your diet. But there's also things that in the world of holistic, there's colloidal silver, there's Artigen. There's all kinds of things you can do that help build up your fortification against all the side effects from surgery. And, of course, cleanliness. And I need to say everybody, I think, today carries around the hand wash or something very similar. And, of course, in some cases, you shouldn't be using that either. In some cases, you may have an allergic reaction to that. It's in every hospital now, and now I see all kinds of variables. 5 years ago, well, almost 5 years ago, when we were spending so much time at Jackson Memorial for the grandson who was having so many difficulties after he got burnt. I mean, you know, we had to go in with gowns, masks, hats, gloves, everything. In the very beginning, we even had to cover our shoes. So bacteria and germs are a big thing after a surgery, especially if you're left with any kind of an open wound. Now, a lot of times, they'll put a drain tube in an open wound to keep it from getting more infection. So I think all of these things that are important to know about. I'm struggling to know whether anybody is hearing me because apparently Shelley can't call in, and I'm not getting any feedback on Facebook. So if anybody's out there listening and can hear the show, either Facebook me or something, if you're not a place where you can call in the number, because I'm not sure what's going on. Let me see. I think that there must be something else happening. I'm not sure what it is. It could even be my computer. so I'm not positive. But I think I'm going to try one more thing. I'm going to try to call Shelley on the phone and see if she can get in or can't get in. So everybody hang tight for 2 seconds. Yep, I'm not showing any callers or anything else going on, so I'm not sure what's happening. Everybody hang on for 1 minute. Hi, honey. Have you tried to call in again?
No. I was waiting to get in touch with you, so
I've been sending you texts. I said call in to the station. You're not getting those texts? That's weird. I don't know what's going on. I had a terrible time getting in, and now I'm in, but I don't even know if anybody can hear me. Try to call in now. All right. Yeah, I will. I apologize, everybody. Part of the problem could be Renee, because, you know, my technical abilities suffer greatly. So although this does happen about once a month with connectivity and all the other things, there you are. You're on. All right. Okay, so Shell's in now, so that means we should be a go. So if some of you are listening, I apologize for all this this big problem. Shell, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful.
Yep.
So
yeah, I'm telling you, products are great when they're working, but I'm looking at my phone. I don't have one text from you.
Yeah,
It'll come in when the show's over.
yeah. Well, and my phone is still telling me, gives me a text thing, and it says, everything is erased that you and I already did, except for are we having technical issues, still hearing music. And that was at 7:04, and I text you like four more times after that. Isn't that something?
Ow.
And none of them are there. None of them are there. So something in the air. Who knows what the deal is? But I started filling everybody in on some of the issues with having a surgery, and we talked I talked a little bit about afterwards. Ironically, some of the things that I found even online, which I am a big proponent of, as you are as well, is ice, especially for a surgical procedure where there's an incision. You can oftentimes use an ice pack to alleviate and deaden some of the nerve endings so that there's less pain, so you don't have to be on so many painkillers, which is another side effect to deal with after a surgery.
Right.
But the big things are things like I'm getting a call from somebody who probably wants to see if the radio show's all right. Fill people in about what you know about surgery, Shell.
Hello?
Well, some of the things that happen during surgery can actually lead to complications after.
Can I call you right back?
I had had a situation where I had surgery, abdominal surgery, and I was left in the recovery room improperly. I never took any action against the hospital, and if I had known back then what I know now, I probably would have, if nothing else but to bring to the attention of the incompetence of the recovery staff. But I was left on, this was after surgery, I was left on a metal table without any blankets on me, and I didn't even have a blanket, you know, nothing. I mean, I was naked. And I never quite understood that. And I remember waking up at one point, and I was so cold, but I was in that state of delirium. So what happened was it injured my back, because when you shiver, it actually pulled my back out.
Mm-hmm.
So once I came home from the hospital, I kept thinking it was from the surgery, and I didn't do anything about it. And it wasn't until almost several months later that I went for an MRI on my back, and they found out what happened. So one of the things is whenever you have any kind of a surgical procedure, pay attention to how you come out in the recovery room, all right? Make sure that you're aware of how your body feels. Now, certain pain in and around the incision area is normal, but if you're having pain that's unrelated to the incision area and where the surgery was done, it's really important that you communicate this to your doctors. It was unfortunate for me at that time that I ended up having a doctor who was very arrogant and closed-minded, as this particular surgery that they did to me didn't work, and the doctor blamed it on me. Like, well, I don't know what else you want me to do. You know, it was one of those type of doctors. He put me on medication that made me faint and blamed that on me. It's like, you know.
That's always nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, this was when I was developing the idea that not all doctors were in the business to help people. Some of them were in there because they had God complexes or for the money or whatever. He did not become a doctor out of compassion. He was way too arrogant for it. But one of the things I did not do that I highly recommend to people is to pay attention to how your body is healing. We're going to talk about some things you can do to assist that. Like pain management is one thing. Using ice is a great thing. Arnica pellets are a great thing because it's homeopathic. It's not a pill. It's not a painkiller. It's an homeopathic painkiller. There are certain types of painkillers that actually aid in the body releasing the pain impulses. So arnica would not affect other medication you're on because it's homeopathic. It's not an herb. Sometimes you have to be careful with herbs because some herbal remedies can interact with pharmaceuticals. So if you're taking pharmaceutical drugs, it's important that you check if there's any issues with taking certain herbs like turmeric and things like that are great for reducing inflammation. If you've had any kind of joint surgery or anything like that, you want to take things that are anti-inflammatory. Bromelain is one of the things that would be safe. Bromelain is pineapple extract in supplement form. Bromelain is a great supplement to take if you've had any kind of joint issues because it's a natural anti-inflammatory, and it can help to keep things working a little bit better. If you want to take some MSM, the initials are like Mary, Stephen, Mary, MSM. Long word, there's vegan and vegetarian forms of MSM, so obviously I recommend those because then you're not getting any animal derivatives. But MSM and bromelain can help with joint issues. So I know a lot of people go in for shoulder replacement or hip replacement or knee surgery or shoulder surgery. These types of supplements can actually help the healing process. And again, anything that's going to help with circulation, you want to, just like we talk in all the other shows, it's important to reduce acidity in the body and to raise the alkaline level. The higher your alkalinity, the easier it is for the body to heal. Also, anything that's acidic causes inflammation. Inflammation internally causes pain. So it's really important to not drink sodas while you're trying to recover. Eat as fresh as you can. Try to stay away from packaged things, especially things that have aspartame and MSG and things like that, because these are all really acidic to the body. Drink as much fresh water as you can, or at least good fluids. You know, if you want to drink maybe some iced teas, you can make your own home-brewed iced teas. Don't get the commercial iced teas that have all kinds of nonsense added to them. You know, but you want to hydrate. It's really, really, really important to drink a lot of water after surgery because you get pumped with a lot of chemicals, the anesthesia, things like that. And you want to assist the body in being able to flush some of these because although you need them during surgery, the bottom line is they're not good for the body. They are toxins. So you want to aid the body in kind of ridding some of those toxins. And the more you drink fresh water, especially lemon water, because now you're going to start flushing not only toxins, but you're going to be flushing any edema that might develop as a result of surgery. And again, you're going to be doing it in a natural, non-pharmaceutical way. You don't have to worry about any side effects. But lemon water, you can add a little bit of stevia or xylitol to it. which taste like sugar, but they're completely natural. They're plant-based. They have no artificial ingredients in them, providing that you buy those brands that don't have anything added to them, but just stevia or xylitol, and some companies make a combination of the two because it has a slightly sweeter taste. I get Stevita Supreme from Amazon. You add that to the lemon water, and it's very refreshing, extremely healthy, and it's great for reducing inflammation and edema in the body. So that's just some of the stuff from the get-go. But listen to your body, and if you're having any issues, especially issues that aren't near the incision site, it's really important. I didn't find out for almost 6 months what had happened to my back because I kept thinking it was a complication of the surgery, and it wasn't. It was a complication of how they allowed me to wake up in the recovery room. And by the time we found out that the recovery staff had not attended to me properly, I was so messed up at that point that I didn't do anything, and I should have brought it to the attention of the hospital, and I didn't.
Well, God knows I have brought things to the attention of the hospital on several occasions. And most of the time, my overall evaluation of most hospitals is good. The hospital that Mike has been in this past week was awesome. You end up waiting for things like results to come back from tests, things like that, but all in all, the care and the administration of the care was awesome. And of course, because we went into a doctor's office in the beginning of this, and the doctor came in on his day off and rushed Michael in for emergency surgery, that was, of course, you know, a blessing to us.
Of course.
But one of the things that I think is too bad is when you get into an emergency scenario, a lot of things are left unsaid. So, like, if you're preparing for a surgery, it's smart for you to go online, Google surgeries, the kind you're having, see what other people have written on the internet about their experiences so that you're aware if something matches up with some of the issues you know you have. Like, for instance, sensitive skin. This can turn into a major, major problem. Like I said before we really got the show together this morning, if you were listening, some of the adhesive that they paint on your skin in the incision area, instead of stitches now, people are allergic to. But if it's an emergency situation, your anesthesiologist doesn't know that about you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if the questionnaire you fill out isn't clear, because I've read some questionnaires that are, like, so intricate, oh, my God, they know how many teeth are in your head, everything. So, but others are very generic and don't mean much. And in a very, you know, like, a, you know, say you're 14 and you're a hockey player and you get cut on the ice and they, you know, it's hockey skates can make some severe lacerations. So say you get rushed to the hospital and the anesthesiologist comes in and says, I'm just going to give you a local anesthetic for this area. And then they do all that, and then they close up the wound after they've cleaned it and done all that kind of stuff. They pull it together, and they put it together with this adhesive and this tape that's got like a string in it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have sensitive skin, you can compound that whole laceration to the loss of a leg.
Yep, that's right.
So it's important that you don't blindly assume that the man in the white coat knows all this stuff about you. He's doing his job, but your job in this scenario is to make sure he knows that maybe you have psoriasis. You're not in a flare-up right now, but you have psoriasis, or you have rosacea, or any of those. Maybe all you've got is a mild case of eczema, which so many people have those things, and they live with them all their life, so they don't think it's important because it's not a life or death situation. But it can be if somebody's putting something on your skin that you have an allergic reaction to. So all of these things are things that you need to be prepared for. One of the other things that happens to a lot of people, if they've been anesthetized for like longer than 3 hours for a major surgery, like a back surgery or something like that, the lethargy when you wake up is sometimes impossible to get past. So they fit you with all kinds of compressionary clothing, socks, these leg wraps that they plug into the end of your bed that, like, squeeze your legs, your calves, and then let go, and then squeeze your legs and let go. That's compression. And that's so that you don't form a blood clot, because when you're lethargic, so is your heart, so is your blood. Everything slows down.
Right.
So now they're taking all these precautions, but again, I've been in the hospital before when the leg compression things are there, and whoever set you up was rushed or called away and forgot, and you never got them put on, and you already have an issue. You take a blood thinner because you form blood clots. You're in trouble.
Exactly. Yep.
You're in trouble. So again, it's you at the end of the day who cares the most about you, unless you have a mom like me, and then it might be different. But you have to make sure that whoever is doing all these things to you is aware of what goes on in your body. Now, one of the other things is the chest infections that often come from being sedated and slowing down your breathing and everything to such, you know, like almost comatose kind of a place. So what do you suppose happens there, Shell? When you slow down everything in your chest, your breathing, your heart rate, everything to have a surgery, what do you suppose happens when you wake up from that surgery? What's going on with your chest?
Well, it's not from being slowed down. It's from because they artificially slow it down. Your body's responding to the chemicals they use. And again, they use a lot of chemicals in preparation for surgery. But when they do that artificially, it actually affects the tissues, the mucous tissues of the chest cavity. And a lot of people can then get secondary, like, lung infections from that. You know,
that's right.
They'll wake
that's
up
right.
and have a terrible
and water forms. If it's and you're right, it's done by them, and it is something that is done to calm you down and to keep you in a good place. But if you have almost every questionnaire asks you if you have heart problems, if you have asthma, if you have any kind of issue like that. But again, if it's an emergency surgery and you haven't filled out any of those papers, and you know you're going in for surgery and you're awake enough or a family member is awake enough, some of these things are imperative to say to the people that are going to be in there and put you under.
Exactly. Like, if parents enough to realize what's happening, then you need to say, hey, I have asthma, hey, I have allergies to penicillin, hey, you know, and make sure that you're telling somebody that's in a responsible position and is writing it down somewhere. Or if you're incoherent and you're fortunate enough to have a family member, that family member then needs to say those things. And we've both been in situations at hospitals where we saw the care that was being given to a loved one not being handled properly based on the individual needs of that person because of some of their unique issues. I've seen that happen to a couple of my family members. You've seen it happen to a couple of your family members. So if you happen to be the lucid one and you're there on behalf of somebody having surgery, it's not out of place for you to ask questions. A lot of people get timid because they think that they're second-guessing the doctor. Well, I'm sorry, there are a lot of mistakes made. Doctors, nurses, they're all overworked. You know, many hospitals are understaffed. There's a lot of pressure. And just because of rushing around and timing, mistakes can be made. Remember, they're not computers. They're not robots. They're human beings. And they can get rushed and distracted and think they're dealing with patient A when they're dealing with patient B, you know. They're dealing with procedures all day long, and if they think they have a different patient in front of them, they don't know you personally, you know, in many cases, especially if it's an emergency. So it really is our responsibility to make sure that we make sure the doctor knows our particular unique situations. If we have allergies, if we have sensitivities, if we have other conditions that may affect them treating this thing for you. You know, I mean, you hear all the time these nightmare stories about how somebody goes in for a surgery and they do the wrong surgery on the person, you know. And so it's always a good idea to double check, even if you're in an emergency situation. You know, if you're lucid, ask questions. Make sure you know what surgery they're taking you in for. And if you're not the one lucid and there's some loved one there on your behalf, that person is completely appropriate for you to ask questions. Make sure that the doctors know there's somebody looking out for this person and make sure that they understand if there's any unique issues that haven't, that maybe they're not aware of.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm a firm believer, and I've said this 1,000 times. When you have a loved one in the hospital, and I'm not saying this to discredit the people in the hospital. I'm just saying it because it's true. The hospital staff needs to know that the person laying in that bed has family that care about them.
Exactly. Exactly.
Especially if they're really elderly and it's really, you know, that time, it's so important for somebody to be there and say, you know, that's my great uncle, and you show up, and it's just, I don't know, it's in our makeup. We're all the same, and now that person becomes more real to them. Imagine if you did that every day, every day, every day, every day, and now most of the nurses work 12 hours a day. They come in at 7 o'clock in the morning and work until 7 o'clock at night. And sometimes they don't leave until 8:30, 9 o'clock because they're still trying to get everything put into the computer. So a long day to be running around dealing with anywhere from, oh, I would guess 8 to 15 patients that are in your charge. So understanding that, and there's always the fact that we all know that the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So It's just a fact. It's not, you know, it's a bad thing if you're not squeaking, but it's not set up to be a bad thing. Nobody does it with any intent to do harm. But if you're real quiet and laying in your room and not saying anything to anybody and not bothering anybody, that's probably where you stay. And that's probably what happens. One of the other things that's really important after a minor surgery, one of the most important things is to be sure that your body is functioning again. By that I mean urination, bowel movements, good swallowing. You can see good. You know, your vision isn't double. You're not having blurriness. All of those things could be little flags that are coming up that you need to mention to somebody. So exercise, breathing deeply, all the things that we've talked about for overall good health after a surgery are even more imperative.
Having people now walk sometimes within 12 hours of a surgery. I mean, it shocked me the first time I ever saw that, you know. But now even doctors are starting to realize the benefit of getting the body moving again because of circulation issues. And the more you circulate, the blood, get oxygenated, even with very slow motions, even if you literally just shuffle across the floor, the bottom line is you're using muscles to do that. So even if you can't move your body normally and swing your arms and lift your legs, just the fact that you're upright and you're moving forward on your own energy benefits the body, and it also can help reduce the inflammation, because as you use your muscles, even in limited ways, you're starting to flex things, you're starting to move the lymph glands a little bit, and it helps to rid your body of some of these toxins. If you remain sedentary and try not to move past the pain at all, it actually increases the pain. So this is actually kind of a fallacy. Sometimes when people are in pain after surgery, they're afraid to move, because when they move, obviously, they feel pain, which is sort of normal. But what they don't understand is that safe movements, even if it hurts a little bit, don't be strenuous, obviously, but as long as there are safe movements, will actually benefit in reducing pain over time, whereas if you remain sedentary and don't move at all, and your pain will increase because you're going to continually develop more and more inflammation as a result of the surgery trauma.
Mm-hmm. Well, and every time, that commercial, we've talked about this before, the body in motion tends to stay in motion.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It is a great commercial, great, great commercial. And I know, now at age 65, I am, like yesterday, I was in my car a long time because I had to do errands with grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and I was running everybody all over town. So I was probably in my car driving for at least 6 hours yesterday. And then on the weekend, sitting in the chair beside Mike and sleeping in a chair beside Mike. So I was pretty achy yesterday. And then when I did the car ride, I was like, oh, my God, Renee. So when I got home, I'm still showing my house, and I had a lot of visitors last night. But I realized once I got done, I toured like 11 people last night.
Wow.
In the house. And I felt so much better. So much better. Just walking around the house. I mean, and I also went to the grocery store, so I walked there and everything. But I feel so much better if I'm not just sitting someplace that it isn't even funny. I mean, so much better. So after Mike had his surgery this week, the very first day, he and I got up and walked around. Of course, we had to take the IV and everything, because they were giving him antibiotics and all that kind of stuff after the surgery, because they were inside of his body. And even though they didn't do it with an incision, they did it through his throat. And the poor guy now has a sore tongue. He says, Mom, I actually can feel where they must have had something against my tongue to keep it out of their way. I said,
oh, boy.
There's a few people I'd like to do that to, you know. We both got a big laugh. And,
right.
But he, on that note, he came home yesterday, last night, and is doing fairly well. But, of course, now we have to make some decisions about a more permanent answer to what his...
Now, are you making decisions based on options the doctor gave you, or you're waiting for the doctor to make a decision as to what the options are?
Oh, no, he's already given them to me, but
okay.
I haven't given them to anybody else. I want everybody to be in a good place before we talk about it, because it's big stuff. And do it with the doctor. He told me that day after surgery. He gave me like four different options, and none of them are what anybody wishes will happen to them. So, but all of them will be safer than just doing what they did this week to save his life and then still have him be 80 miles away from the only man who knows how to take care of him.
The four options kind of give him more of a permanent solution, or is this is he always going to need additional stuff going on?
Well, I think one of the things, the most positive things, is there's a couple different things that they can do that will, first of all, be a lot safer than the way he is right now. There won't
mm-hmm.
be any chance that he can't get air with the other things that they want to do, and they'll be reversible. So, like, if a new innovation, which happens minute by minute, in the world of medicine. The new innovation comes up, and this amazing young man, the doctor that we were blessed to find, that's a great story too. I'll share that in a minute. He can say, look, they just came up with this. I know like this many doctors that have done it. It works perfect. This is what we're going to do now. It would buy us that kind of time as well.
Right, so, right.
And that's exactly what he said to me. He said, you know, the more time that goes by, the more, you know, the more stuff that's out there. And I said, I get that. So that was good news. But Michael is in a good frame of mind, and he's eating well, and they visited for a while last night, and he's breathing pretty good. And so it's all, you know, and his eyes look bright. His color was good, you know, all the things that you look at to make sure seem all right. But, you know, many years ago when Mike got hit by the car, 1983, on Federal Highway in Deerfield Beach, he was riding his bike across the street and a lady hit him. And he went up into the air and landed on his head, and he was out immediately. And his brother, Spike, was with him, and he came running over, and immediately, of course, paramedics, ambulance, everything was there. They called me at work. Somebody drove me to the scene, which was just, you know, like maybe 2 miles down the road on Federal Highway. And I rode in the ambulance to the emergency room, and Mike was in a coma for 10 days. And during that time, he was intubated through his mouth, and that scarred his larynx, vocal cords, which after he came out of the coma created a scar that closed his breathing. So they did another emergency surgery, and that was done by a Dr. Brian Mitchell. He was the on-call ENT in the hospital at that point in time. Saved Mike's life after one of the older doctors in the hospital said to me, and I quote, he may not come out of there, you know that, right? And, of course, it's a good thing he didn't know me when I'm as old as I am now. He might have got punched. But then I was young and a lot more laid back and a little bit fearful of people that I realized were in charge. So
right.
Mitchell saved him. And in the months to come, Dr. Mitchell saved him more than once. And then Dr. Mitchell said to me in the middle of the night after another time when we'd had to go in, and I even helped assist in the application of another tube, he said to me, we need to get Mike to Jackson Memorial. My teacher, Dr. Maniglia, he's an Italian man. He really knows what he's doing, Rini, and I think he can really help us. And I said, well, they tried to get Mike into Miami prior to Dr. Mitchell having to step in, and they wouldn't accept him because we had no insurance and because we didn't live in Dade County. So he couldn't be treated as, you know, because it goes county by county. County hospitals are run by their county. So like if you have to come in on an emergency, you have to live in that county. So he said, no, he said, we can do this. I will get on the phone. I'll talk to Dr. Maniglia. And by that time, I had a wonderful boss at a Denny's restaurant who pushed through my insurance because it was, when Mike got hurt, I was like, I don't know, 15 days shy of being on the policy. But the original accident couldn't be covered because I wasn't covered yet for it and had family coverage. But
right.
when this with his throat, they pushed it through to be covered under my Denny's insurance. So we get to Miami, we meet Dr. Maniglia, and even he had a tough time. There were 3 more surgeries before Mike was okay for the last 32 years until this just happened last August when he couldn't breathe again. So when in August, when he was struggling with the breathing, and we knew there were a couple doctors up here, and he'd been to see a couple of them, and nobody was doing anything. I mean, a couple of the doctors we went in to see, I'd have done a better job with absolutely no training whatsoever. So I thought to myself, what do I do? So I called Dr. Mitchell, and he's retired, and I left a message on his voicemail, his business voicemail. Within 10 minutes, I get a call back, and I said on the phone, you probably don't remember me. This is Renee Brewer. You took care of my son and we're back in that place again. Calls me back and he says, of course I remember you. How is Mikey?
Aww.
And he sent me and the kids to this doctor in Miami. And he's another Dr. Maniglia. This is his forte, the trachea stuff. And he really knows what he's doing. And so, like I said to the kids, I said, we're really blessed with the doctors because Dr. Mitchell, we're blessed with him because he's the one who led us in the right direction. And that's something else I want to mention. When I was young, if you said to me, you need to go to several different doctors, I would not have done that because I would have thought I didn't have time and every doctor knows what every doctor knows. They all go to medical school. That's the way I thought.
Yeah, so do it. Same way,
yeah.
I thought.
Yeah, it's not true, people. It's not true. It's just like everything else. You have some singers that can make you cry and some singers that you'd like to put duct tape over their mouth, right? It's the same with doctors. So if
right.
you're blessed enough to find a really, really driven doctor who became a doctor and who specializes in something that is, you know, life-threatening, like breathing, you need a good one. So it is smart and it is valuable to you to take time to make sure that you pick out the right doctor. And I can't emphasize that enough. And if that means a couple visits to see if the two of you like each other, number one, to see if he listens when you talk, number two, and to see if the next time you come in he remembers you, that would be number three. All those things are important for your treatment of this doctor. So this man, I get the sense that he cares about my Michael. So I feel totally safe with him. I mean, the man came in on his day off after not seeing Mike for 10 months, right? And just totally took charge and took his whole day to take care of my son. I mean, you know, I realize that's what we all think they all do. They all don't. You know, they just don't. There are some that are awesome and some that are not so awesome.
And the other thing is when you're sizing up a doctor, also see if they listen to you. One of the, and when I was younger, I was put off by this. You know, I'm like you said, if I had known 30 years ago what I know now, I would not have allowed a couple of the doctors to talk to me the way they did. But, you know, we were very brainwashed that doctors were godlike, you know, and you didn't question them or anything like that. But as you get older and experienced in dealing with doctors, you, like you said, not all of them are good. Not all of them are as knowledgeable as you think they should be after all that schooling. And the ones that are closed-minded and arrogant are actually that way because they're not very – well, most of them are that way because they're not very good. They don't want to be questioned because they don't want to have to think out of the box. I've noticed that every doctor that had special gifts always thought outside the box. Okay, well, this is what I learned in, you know, in all my years in schooling, but this is what I've learned in the field. And they're able to make adjustments on the run. I really have a lot of respect for emergency room doctors for that reason, because they're constantly put in a position of having to think outside of the box and having to take what they learned and maybe tweak it a little bit, because from person to person to person, it's not always what they're shown in the classroom. So you have these doctors that won't deviate even one iota from what they learned, or they don't have any respect for alternative medicine, or they don't have any respect for the fact that somebody wants to be a vegetarian. You know, they don't educate themselves to the other things that can help a person bring about health. There's a lot of doctors now that respect vegetarianism, that actually recognize that it is an extremely healthy lifestyle, or that respect the person that doesn't want to take a cortisone shot or something like this. There's other doctors that are very arrogant and will actually try to intimidate you into believing that your lifestyle choices are, number one, not healthy when they are, or that have that are ridiculous, like they try to belittle you. So you have to look for this in your doctor. If you have a doctor that's coming across extremely arrogant or not listening to you, you're trying to tell them things and they're shutting you down and not letting you explain, then you have to look for somebody else. Look for somebody that you can have a rapport with. Look for somebody that you can be comfortable talking to. Don't go to a doctor that you feel intimidated by, you know. And that's probably something that it took me almost 2 decades to finally realize. And it makes a huge difference, because if they know who you are and they're friendly and comfortable with you, then you're going to at least be able to have a conversation with them, and they'll remember your idiosyncrasies the next time they see you. It took me 20 years to finally find a doctor who was a clinical ecologist, so he understood a lot of the holistic stuff. But the beauty of him is that he listened. He was very patient, compassionate, and he listened to me and responded to my unique needs. He didn't put me in a cookie-cutter syndrome where he just gave me the same prescription he gave the first 10 people that came in ahead of me.
Well, and that's a big part of it, knowing that he's listening to you. And, of course, we've said that a couple times, and I think it's so important. If you have to get his attention every 3 seconds, then don't. We're down to 60 seconds. I want to tell everybody, today is the day that Michael Jackson died. And I, you know, I'm not a avid Michael Jackson follower, but I believe that everything that happened to that young man was because of us, because he changed, I think he changed himself to be what he thought everybody else wanted him to be, but I believe he was way ahead of his time. I mention his song, The Man in the Mirror, so many times, and if you listen to the verses in that, you realize that he absolutely, positively was ahead of his time. So I'd like to remember him today, and I think that was a sad day. But I want to send everybody on their way, and for helping me through our technical difficulties this morning. And we will be back tomorrow. And everybody go out and have a great day. God bless. Thank you. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Reen. All right, talk to you in the morning, everyone.
Bye-bye.